So the parable of the talents is the third in the series of parables in Matthew, offered as instruction for preparing for the coming of man. As Lottie read in Thessalonians, we are to put on the breastplate of faith and love, and for helmet, the hope of salvation. But there's more that we have to do as well. In each of these parables in Matthew, preparing for the coming of the Son of Man, the master goes away for an extended period of time and then returns. And when the master returns, he demands an accounting. As the first two servants, I can tell where my brain is, relay the gains that were made in what the master had left, the master responds with pleasure and indicates a second piece of the judgment that we weren't told of initially, that these servants will now share in his joy as well as his pleasure. But the third servant misjudges the master and is afraid and gives the master back only what the master had left in his, and the master is furious. This servant has done nothing with the treasure that was left with him. Dan Harrington suggests that the reference to the third servant in this case might easily be the movement within Judaism to build a fence or a hedge around the Torah in AD 70, as opposed to those who took Christianity out into the world, with the caution that that should not be used in any way to be critical of another faith, obviously, but looking instead at the charge to share what the gift is of the faith. This third servant did what equates to burying the treasures of Judaism, while the first two ensured that the gifts of faith prospered and spread. So imagine being asked to steward a treasure beyond imagining. The talent was apparently a 10 years worth of salary. So 2 talents and 5 talents, that much more. So an unimaginable amount of wealth. So maybe better put, it's a treasure beyond all imagination. And if we think of what the gifts of the Spirit and the gifts of God are, they are treasures beyond all imagination. That of life, that of love, that of the many, many things about which we sing and pray every week. What would God want us to do? How are we meant to multiply that blessing in the world? This last week, Karen and Helm led a wonderful conversation around the book Cast, and it led us into an interrogation of race and racism in our lives and in the world. In December, we're continuing the conversation with Presiding Bishop Curry's book, considering how to live into that challenge and that problem. How we live to and multiply God's love with those around us. This has become such a difficult issue for a lot of reasons, partly because of how some churches have used and are actively using the gospel in theory or the scriptures to exclude rather than to offer love. It has at times made me even more retiring about conversation than I would have been otherwise, especially with the secular crowd who seems to want to put all of the believers into one bucket. But it's equally difficult if one of us or all of us are trying to be polite, to engage with Christians from churches using scripture to judge and exclude. How do you multiply God's love and multiply the gifts and the treasure that we've been given? It's just hard. To be honest, at least in my experience, Episcopalians are not very good at sharing their faith. We don't like to get in anybody else's business, and we like to quietly go about ours. I'm not sure about everybody else with the Lutheran and the Catholic backgrounds, but Episcopalians are often called the frozen chosen for a reason. So we're fairly lousy in a lot of regards. And I think this is telling us that we need to do better, and we need to be better. In the past couple of months, I've had 2 interchanges with local people from deeply conservative traditions who have made comments that were exclusionary. To the first one, I didn't say very much. The conversation quickly took a turn and I was completely unprepared, other than to say when he noted that he believed the Bible to be completely literal that I disagreed. We realized immediately that we were going to stop the conversation about at that point. But I now deeply regret not having made at least a gentle comment to his passing slight, which was writing off an entire group of people, at least generally, to say that my understanding of the gospel was that we are to love our neighbors radically, even and especially when they are different from something that we understand. And I wondered how he might understand differently. That's what I wish I had done. The second interchange I did engage, it was respectful. We agreed on nothing. And I'm not entirely clear that any gains were made. But who's to say? Maybe one day that person will ask herself, if God is about love, what if it's more dangerous not to love than it is to be open to loving and looking for Christ in all others? I don't know, and we don't know. But the message today in the gospel seems pretty clear, that we have both the opportunity and the charge in preparation for the coming to recognize and be grateful and multiply the blessing given for us for the joy of God. And we do this in part by coming together each week, but I think we have to do more still. Episcopalians are good at that part. We're just not very good at the second part. I will say that Catherine, I think, helped us do that this summer by arranging for a small group of us to do some Firewise preparation to serve somebody else completely outside the church and share with them even briefly that we came from Metau Episcopal. And that also trained us, even with a simple prayer, to turn our hearts outward toward others in what we do. Maybe we make a simple invitation for someone to join one of our services or the book club. Maybe we find the courage to respond in love to a comment made that is hurtful. Jesus never told us that it would be easy. He might have actually told us a few times that it specifically would not be. And he certainly says that it matters, and that it matters a lot. How will we multiply God's incredible gifts, treasure beyond all understanding?